Good evening, fellow ARFCOM members and anyone else out there listening. My name is Benjamin, and it's now time for your radio-free ARFCOM. We are the Internet's voice for AR15.com, and I'm broadcasting live right now from South Florida. Hey, folks out there listening, this is your show, so feel free to call us at 415-287-0074. And visit the Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com. You can also go to the thread and get the additional call-in numbers as well. And as always, I would love for the audience out there listening to share your thoughts and comments with us here at Radio Free ARFCOM. Also, please visit AR15.com's site sponsor links and support Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Also, very important, don't forget about the new TNVC AR15.com giveaway. Check out the new TAC thread in general discussion for more info. I have the link on that up in the show topics for tonight. It's your opportunity to win a night vision device that's worth about $3,000. All you got to do is subscribe to the AR15.com newsletter, follow the links, and you have a chance at winning a very, very cool optic night vision monocular through our friends at tacticalnightvision.com. You all remember Victor from the previous shows. He's a great guy. We really appreciate him supporting AR15.com. So please check out the newsletter, register. It's your chance to get in for a great optic at a very, very reasonable price. I mean, hey, it's free. All you got to do is sign up. Also, our friends at the Kentucky Hometown Forum have a shoot coming up this weekend at Knob Creek. I've posted a link up on the show topics for those of you in the East, Northeast, Mid-South, Midwest that want to try and make it there. So again, our friends at the Kentucky Hometown Forum have a shoot coming up this weekend. For those of you out there listening, if y'all have any events that you want to post for your hometown forum or your shooting event or your local shooting club or something involving AR15.com and the members here, please give me a heads up. I'd be happy to read it over the air for you. As always, I encourage the listening audience out there to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible. That way I can book them ahead of time and get your guests on the air, because it's all about you folks and what you want to hear. For you regulars, please encourage your ARFCOM friends as well as friends and family to listen to Radio Free ARFCOM, because the more listeners that we have, the more support we can get, and we can continue to make this show better for you, the audience. And if you have any ideas for the show, please don't hesitate to let me know. Remember, folks, I work for you, the audience, and it's all about you guys. So for those of you on AR15.com right now, you can contact me via email at BenjaminAR15.com, or if you want to get a hold of me right now during the show, send an instant message to me, Benjamin. On tonight's show, we have a really cool show featuring Joe DeBurgolis from the NRA. We've got Gary from the Kentucky Hometown Forum to talk about the shoot coming up this week. It's Saturday the 25th. If you're in the area, if it's, you know, a couple hours drive, make it out there. Knob Creek is awesome. They actually invited me to go out there. I don't know if I can make it. If I can, I might make a weekend trip out of it, seeing as my schedule job-wise rapidly cleared up this week. But moving on, we also had we have coming up on tonight again Gary from the hometown. We have also Jeremy Rayberg, the author of Zombie Island, yet another awesome zombie tale for all you zombie freaks out there in ARFCOM land and your Radio Free ARFCOM listeners. I know it's a fun segment. Lots of people like it, so we're going to talk to Jeremy about his new book. Last week, we talked to Joe again, leading off with the updates. He had some really cool info from the NRA board meetings and what the NRA is doing to fight the good fight for our God-given, constitutionally enumerated rights and our freedoms. Thanks again, Joe. We'll have him on in just a little bit. We also had a very, very cool segment. Lieutenant Colonel Paul Darling was talking about his experiences in Afghanistan, and in particular, his project called Taliban Safari. It's a manuscript he's currently shopping around to publishers to make a book out of it. And speaking of books, our third guest last week was ARFCOM zombie novel author Stephen Pajak. He spoke with us about his zombie novel Mad Swine, The Beginning, and how it went from an ARFCOM thread into a printed novel that you can actually buy now on Amazon.com or through Stephen Pajak's website. So again, very, very cool. Obviously, you guys out there know that ARFCOM leads to great things. Air15.com, you got a guy here who wrote a story on the forum, and the people responded, and now he's got yet another of his published books. So if you missed it, go to the Radio Free ARFCOM forum and click on the September 13th Radio Free ARFCOM show link thread, and it'll take you directly to the podcast of last week's show. You can find all the links there. You can find all the material. You can find all the cool stuff that we talked about. Last week was an awesome show. We really kicked butt, and we're looking forward to keeping it hot for you guys out there in the listening audience. Thanks again for listening, as always. Now, for those of you sports fans out there, I told you last week that we're going to start getting hot and heavy into the NFL, into fantasy football. Obviously, we're not a sports show, but we do have an AR15.com fantasy league. It's called Beans versus No Beans. And I'm sure you're as excited as I am now that the NFL season is underway. And October is almost here for baseball playoffs and the World Series. Like I said, in our own little corner of the sports universe sits the AR15.com Beans versus No Beans Fantasy Football League. Now, week one is all but over, save for tonight's Monday Night Football premiere. I should say week two is almost over. Excuse me. We're going to go over some winners and losers right here for the Beans versus No Beans League. Last week, big winners. Radio Free ARFCOM won their game with 142 points. I actually led the scoreboard last week. In number two was the EBR Patriots with 117 points. The Glowworms had 114 points. The LMT Defenders had 110 points. And Mr. Bond had 103 points. Those were the big winners from week one. The big losers from week one were Philip McCrevis, which was actually my opponent, put a very, very respectable score up at 129 points. Shiver Me Milkbones had 94 points. The Herbie Kirby's, who is my current opponent this week, had 91 last week in a loss. The Buckeye Bruisers had 89, and the Thundercats had 88, rounding out the winners and losers for week one. Now, week two, tough week. Lots of good matchups this week. For me, Radio Free ARFCOM, I'm up against the Herbie Kirby's. I've got 111 points going into Monday night. However, I'm behind the Herbie Kirby's. They have 138.74. So I got one player. So y'all San Francisco fans out there, I got Crabtree as a receiver. Please cheer him on. I need him to have the game of his life. Give me 27 or 28 points. Hope it happens. Not keeping my fingers crossed. Continuing on, the Glowworms are up 103-67 over the LMT Defenders. The EBR Patriots, 94 over the Buckeye Bruisers, 88. Mr. Bond coming on strong from a sorry week one. He's got 130 over the Shiver Me Milkbones at 112. The Thundercats coming in at a huge 153.80 over Philip McCrevis with a 113. So, again, some very, very good matchups this week. Wish me luck. It doesn't look good, but, again, this is only week two. If any of you or other fantasy players want to get out there on the show to talk smack about your league, our league, or fantasy football in general, give me a call here on the show or drop me a line through AR15.com. Again, email me, Benjamin@AR15.com, or simply send me an IM at Benjamin. We had a pretty cool week this week. This past week, I got Jeff, you remember him, from Okeechobee Shooting Sports. He installed a new rear sight on my Springfield M1 Garand. I had some kind of hokey over-the-receiver scope mount when I bought the rifle that I didn't really like. I figured it's a battle rifle. We want to take this thing back to some battle sights and some iron sights. So I had him install a new rear sight on it. And after doing some photo and video work out at Okeechobee Shooting Sports this past weekend, I figured I'd sight in the Garand and do some plinking and target shooting. So I cranked the elevation the whole way down to zero, and then back up to the first number four notch, as this is pretty close to the 200-yard zero on my M1A. As you remember, a couple weeks ago, I posted some photos, and we talked about sighting that rifle in. Well, the M1 Garand rifle turned out to be right on at 50 yards at that setting, so I decided to plink with it at 100 just to see if it was sighted in. Where I was shooting was Okeechobee Shooting Sports' new long-range rifle gallery, where they have 8-inch reactive rifle-rated steel targets set out at 100 and 200 yards. So I lined up my iron sights, took aim, and proceeded to knock down two targets, and then reset the targets with the third shot. I was really impressed with the accuracy of the M1 Garand, which I hold here in my hands as we speak. It's here in my lap for you listeners out there. You can hear that bolt lock back and on the empty magazine and then slam back forward. At any rate, I only shot about four clips total before my rifle, it was a great shooting, but again, I shot about four clips before my shoulder and my ears, even though I had hearing protection in, really started to feel the effect of the 30-06 rounds through this big, heavy, awesome rifle full of steel and wooden American-made goodness. But I decided after those four clips that it was enough for my shoulder, and I would go shoot my 12-gauge due to its relatively mild recoil, particularly when compared to the Garand. Later this weekend, a buddy and mine were hanging out and enjoying a few cold ones when we saw a Band of Brothers marathon showing on cable. How does this relate? Well, as I was watching, I remarked to my friend just how tough those World War II soldiers, those veterans, must have been to shoot with no hearing protection round after round after round through their M1 Garands in combat, with a cacophony of rifle and artillery fire inundating their every sense. I guess it's no wonder most of our World War II veterans, whether they be our fathers or our grandfathers, had hearing loss, and yet were still tough as nails until the day they died. Now, as I sit here holding an M1 Garand, I couldn't imagine dealing with not only the continued abuse from the sheer recoil of the rifle, much less imagine a whole squad of soldiers around me touching off rounds all over the place in front and back to my sides. I guess it just goes to show you just how great the Greatest Generation really was. God bless those veterans and their families. Now, on to the news. From the NRAILA.org, if y'all want to follow along on the Radio Free ARFCOM forum, we have the link up for the NRAILA. Chuck Norris, as always, out there triggering the vote. You can click on that link. The surprise victory of Christine O'Donnell in Delaware's Senate primary confirms what we've suspected all year, ever since the election of Scott Brown from Massachusetts in January. This year's critical midterm elections are hoping to bring real change to Congress, and it won't be the kind of change favored by the, quote, hope and change crowd, at least I hope not. Chuck's been taking every possible opportunity this year to talk about the importance of voting in these elections. You can read more, again, at WorldNetDaily or at the NRAILA.org. Here's a big shock for you. armed criminals should take notice because, guess what, more Texans carry guns. It says, next time they try to mug someone, rob a convenience store, or take a person's car at gunpoint, the would-be victim or victims also could be carrying weapons. This is from the Amarillo Global News or Amarillo.com. It says, a growing number of Texans have applied and are authorized to carry concealed guns. Figures for the 2009 to 2010 fiscal year have yet to be compiled, but at the end of calendar year, the number of concealed handgun licenses increased 61.4% compared to the previous year. The percentage is, the percentage in the most populated counties in the Panhandle South Plains region is slightly below the 61.4 increase in the state. In other counties, it was much higher, 80%, 70%, 138%. Many of these counties increasing rapidly the percentage of people carrying lawfully concealed firearms. So good for the Texans and their ability to exercise their right to self-defense. We applaud them for that. Now, from the unlikely source of USA Today, this is actually in their economy section because I can't imagine them putting it on their front page, but it says, hunting is proving to be recession-proof. Nationwide, spending on hunting gear is soaring, says the NSSF, which tracks hunting trends. Companies that make, distribute, or sell sporting firearms, ammunition, and supplies generated $27.8 billion in economic activity in 2009 versus $19.1 billion in 2008, says the group's 2010 Firearms and Ammunition Industry Economic Impact Report. Those companies paid $450 million in excise taxes in 2009, up 38% from 2008. The article goes on to say that more than 18.8 million people hunted with firearms in 2009 versus 19.75 million in 2008, says Larry Weindrick of the National Sporting Goods Association. Also, where states where hunting is a large contributor to the economy, license sales are on the rise, according to the NRA. They go on to list some statistics from New York, South Dakota, PA, and Texas. If you all want to look at that, again, it's on the USA Today, buried in the economy section. I have an interesting article here called Avoiding the Constitution from the New York Sun. Let me just grab a sip of water here before I begin to read to you. Again, this is an editorial of the New York Sun. I've posted a link, and it says, avoid the Constitution? Who's got better advice for the GOP, the New York Times or Sarah Palin? The trick is to take advantage of the Tea Party passion and stay away from its extremes. This is a reporter saying, Kate Zernicki from the New York Times. Celebrate the genius of the Constitution, but don't go into particulars. Ms. Zernicki goes on to quote the political sage Stuart Rothenberg as saying he reckons it's very clear that what's best for the election is to focus on Obama, Pelosi, healthcare, and deficit. You see these signs at rallies that are all about the Constitution. They want it to be about these big ideological ideals when I don't think most voters think that's way. That's from Ms. Zernicki. The view from the New York Sun, our view is that Ms. Zernicki and Mr. Rothenberg are selling the voters short. We don't belittle their credentials. But everywhere we've gone lately where the conversation or speeches turn to the Constitution, the place lights up. The idea that the constitutional principles are beyond the ken of the American people strikes us as not only condescending, but inaccurate. They go on to say that a common feature of these cases, they're speaking of some Supreme Court cases, is that the constitutional principles in which they were fought are clearly understood by, perceived by, believed by people with ordinary problems. What was extraordinary was the grit to stand on principle through long court battles and the willingness to gamble on the parchment that emerged from Philadelphia in the summer of 1787. In Utah and Montana, among other states, legislators recently passed laws to protect firearms manufacturing and distribution from regulation by the federal government. Why does this matter, do you ask the AR15.com listeners? Well, here's the answer from this editorial in the New York Sun. The way they are doing it is delineating those weapons that are manufactured and sold in-state, never having been entered into interstate commerce. There's a whole multi-state movement to get such laws passed at the state level precisely because people are paying attention to the Constitution. They're reacting to the fact that the only enumerated power that lets Congress come into a state with federal regulation is the Commerce Clause. And they figure that if a weapon is manufactured and sold in-state, it's none of Uncle Sam's business. By one count, more than half the states in the Union are considering such a law. They can't all be that indifferent to constitutional principles. Continuing on from the article in the New York Sun. Another movement, however embryonic, is starting to form around the power that was in Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, reserved to the states to make gold and silver coin legal tender. With the value of gold, with the value of the dollar having collapsed to 1/1200th of an ounce of gold, millions of people are starting to wonder about what the Constitution says about the dollar. Does the Constitution permit the printing of money indefinitely, even in a time of economic crisis? The article goes on to talk about Obamacare. Where in the Constitution does the Congress get the authority to require an American to purchase health insurance? It goes on to say that, and just as the case of Dick Heller, a retired security guard in D.C., wanted to be able to keep his own gun in his home and won, the Supreme Court, the rights under the Second Amendment had been clouded for more than a century. All over the country, people were following the case with interest. It says, so when the GOP is counseled not to get into these questions, they're referring to questions of constitutionality, we would say take the advice with a grain of salt. The rising stars on the right this season are crafting a whole movement around the phrase constitutional conservatism. That is the stock phrase being used at every stop by Palin. People like to belittle her, but she knows what she's doing. She's not trying to impose their religion and social values. She and others in her movement are trying to restore the idea of constitutionalism, the idea that the Constitution, through which the people granted power to the Congress, also enumerated those powers so as to limit them and laid down on the Congress certain prohibitions, and most famously, the Bill of Rights. Again, this is from the New York Sun. I've posted a link. And if y'all have any questions, again, it's on there if you'd like to discuss. It is called Avoiding the Constitution. I would think that the politicians in Washington are probably the most scared of people actually looking into the Constitution, looking into their Bibles, looking into the documents of the Founding Fathers, and realizing that what our current government is doing is nowhere authorized by God nor man, and it's going to start coming to term. Congress realizes that the more people are awake to the Constitution, the more their power is threatened. So the best thing that we can do is become aware citizens, is to make sure that we know our history, that we read our constitutions, our documents from the Founding Fathers. We look to the Lord or whatever spirituality you may have, and look for these answers that Congress is clearly trying to avoid. Continuing on, before we get to our first guest, we're going to do the armed citizen, as we do every week. Two masked robbers entered the Zeba Food Mart in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and started firing rifles. Store clerk Zahid Khan responded by retrieving a handgun and firing at the criminals, killing one. The other robber fled on foot, but police are hopeful that the store's surveillance video will help track him down. Tulsa Fire Department driver Sam Aggie, who was part of the team that responded to the incident, told the media that the store had been robbed earlier in the year. That's from the Tulsa World in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And that was the armed citizen. And speaking of armed citizens, speaking of the Constitution, and in particular, our favorite organization that's tasked with defending our Constitution from all threats, we have our good friend, Joe DeBurgolis. Joe, welcome. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Great, as always, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. No complaints at the moment. I just found that article interesting about the advice of the New York Times to tell people to the GOP, and I think with probably ill intent, was to, well, let's not talk about the Constitution because, gee, the people are so, the general public, they don't need to know about the details of the Constitution. They're too stupid for that. And yet we have an article here saying, well, wait a minute. These people, the people in power, the Congress people in power, are very, very scared because people are saying, wait a minute, let's look to the Constitution. Let's look at what it says. And are you people in the federal government and all these different states and municipalities that are trying to take away our rights? Are you following the Constitution? And a lot of people are realizing that that may not necessarily be the case.
Certainly right. Obviously, they're seeing that the Patriot 912 Tea Party movement is actually, and obviously proven by this past Tuesday, is a force to be reckoned with. So they're trying to say to the people, and if people believe everything they read in the paper, woe be them. But they're saying they're saying not to believe the Constitution, not to look at the Constitution, listen to what we have to say, and obviously they're wrong. And we're going to prove them wrong, dead wrong, in November.
I agree, and obviously the NRA is the biggest backer, probably the most well known of, you know, the guardian of our constitutional rights. And what are some of the things looking forward into November that we can expect from the NRA? In particular, we didn't really touch on it last week, but we have the trigger of the vote, which is a very, very great thing. We got our buddy Chuck Norris there speaking out for us. And
sure,
what are some of the things that the NRA's are doing out there right now, going forward, I guess, into election season to continue to defend these constitutional rights that we all love and cherish?
Well, I tell you, I think one of the hardest working divisions within the NRA is that of the grassroots division. And Glenn Caroline does a fantastic job marshaling the forces. And basically, that's where the rubber meets the road with the NRA activism on the ground, legislatively and politically. This is a time of year where the election volunteer coordinators, and there's just about one in every congressional district. We need people to volunteer if they're so inclined to help out. But the election volunteer coordinator is sitting there as the representative of the NRA for federal races. So basically, that's another way, another part of the outreach, where there's a member like you and I, Ben, who's volunteering his or her time to be the point of contact. People can go and volunteer as frontline volunteers. They can go to NRAILA.org. There's a drop-down box. Get involved. Click on that. They can sign up. Everything we do is free. They can go and sign up to be activated in time of need when there's a pro-freedom, pro-gun, pro-constitution candidate. Election volunteer gets a list of those people who so volunteer, and then we make them available to those NRA-endorsed candidates for things, and you can pick what you want to do. If you want to be involved in office operations, we can put you there. If you want to be out pounding the ground and doing lit drops, we can get you there. If you want to be speaking on behalf of the candidate, and if the candidate so chooses you, we can put you in that avenue. There's a variety of things that can be done, but this is where one of the more active and successful outreach programs we have. In addition to the frontline volunteer and the election volunteer coordinator, we have campaign field representatives. These are people who have been hired specifically to go into hotbeds, hot races throughout the country, and they're out there drumming support up for the candidate who the NRA endorses, in the grassroots and in the all the activist parties out there together to move forward in a united effort to make sure those candidates so deemed get the full support of the gun community. So we have the campaign field representatives, the election volunteer coordinators who are members, we have frontline volunteers who are out there, you and I just volunteer our time. Then we have the great people down in at headquarters who are responsible, who work out of grassroots, and they do a whole lot of work with support of various campaigns throughout the country, a lot of assessing of what goes on. They work hand-in-hand with our federal side and state and local issues out of ILA. And right now, when the guns are going silent, most of the major competitions are completing or just about to be completed. Although it's very important for the NRA, this is when the NRA ILA starts to shine. This is when the machine's all revved up and it's humming like a fine-tuned car. So they're identifying, they're looking at, they're making sure we get the volunteers, we're going to get the message out, we're going to encourage people to get out there and vote. This is why it's so important, if you haven't done so and your state still allows you to register. If not, start writing letters, talking to your gun buddies, getting people out there, because we need everybody's assistance on Election Day.
Let me ask you something, Joe, about that article I just read some excerpts from. We in this community, we have God and the Constitution on our side. Now, the thing that struck me about that article and some of the things that it sort of is, a lot of those politicians that are in power, in particular those that would want to take our guns, sort of look down their noses at us and they say, well, what does the Constitution matter anymore? I mean, we're in power. Why do you think it scares these politicians so much when people start bringing up the Constitution in general, but also in particular when it comes to our rights to defend ourselves through the lawful ownership and use of firearms?
Well, Ben, it's simple. We found out during a health care debate where our elected officials don't take the time to read the health care bill they're going to vote on and subsequently did vote. I can't tell you that a lot of our elected officials know what the Constitution contains. It's a shame. But if you go to any of these town hall meetings, you ask some point-specific questions, there's a lot of knowledgeable people that are embodied in and represent us. There's a lot that you ask them a question, they'll give you the look like a deer caught in the headlights and hope that a legislative director comes in and saves him or her. So I don't think they really spend time studying, analyzing, reading the Constitution or the Federalist Papers that preceded that or the foundation for a Constitution. So this doesn't surprise me. This is why they're misinformed. We see it daily. Whatever news source you read or watch, you see people misquote things. And we're all human. Excuse me. We're all human, and we're going to have that. But I would say it's a shame, but a lot of our elected officials don't know what's contained within the Constitution, and that's why they beg off or they don't really fully explain themselves when they're explaining or answering a question that is centered upon the Constitution. That's why it's vital that we do it ourselves. That's why Glenn Beck's so successful. But this, I mean, it's a daily classroom. You watch Glenn Beck, he's talking about the Constitution. He's talking about the rights enumerated therein. He's talking about the people that came together, the founding fathers. It's a classroom. He's not telling lies. It's all there. But the truth hurts. I think I touched about this last week. Truth hurts. People don't want to hear it. So especially if it goes against the people who are diametrically opposed to our rights. It's a very simple thing for us, or me in particular, Ben. When I'm going to go carry on a debate, or I'm going to go carry, you know, my standard of pro-freedom, pro-rights, pro-Constitution, pro-Second Amendment, say I have the Constitution on my side. More so now with the last two Supreme Court decisions. I had it before, but now for the naysayers, they have to stay home. They actually ruled on it. So that took a lot of their ammunition or their arrows from their quiver when they're baiting us. That's why you're seeing a lot of people back away from the Second Amendment issue.
How important is that when you think about the Constitution and the use it is, you know, for those of us in sort of this pro-freedom movement, whatever you want to call it, you know, however you want to classify it, but for those of us that are out there talking about freedom and talking about things that we want to have, you know, we don't want to be infringed upon or interfered with from the government, how important is it for not only, you know, like we're always talking about getting out to vote, but know what you're really voting for, in particular with relation to the Constitution. Know what's out there and get out there and study it and take, you know, maybe take a class or volunteer to teach a class about the Constitution and about, you know, this American history that seems continually to be, you know, downplayed or disregarded in the education system and whatever else, whatever other arenas of public discourse. It seems like the American history, in particular the history of the Constitution and the way these men thought when they wrote it, and their attitudes and their ideas and their beliefs and their religion, they were all sort of whitewashing that now. So I personally feel that it's a huge thing that we need to touch on and we need to bring back into the discourse. And I think that scares a lot of the people that are in power in the media centers today in particular.
Oh, I think you're totally right, Ben. I mean, if you just look at what's being taught to our kids in school nowadays, the parents, I mean, unfortunately, nowadays, both parents need to work. So they're out there working. They're getting tired. We're all the same. And when some don't take advantage of the PTA or PTO meetings to find out exactly what's happening or transpiring with their children in the classroom. But a lot of the civic teaching and lessons that we used to have, I mean, there are schools that don't even say the Pledge of Allegiance anymore. I mean, that's why, if you remember back a few months ago, when the eyes of the nation were focused upon Texas, and God bless Texas for doing it, but because Texas has so many school systems and has so many kids in school, that they buy the largest volume of textbooks in the country. So a lot of school systems across this country go with the Texas standard, they call it, and books. Some opt out of it, but majority of them, because they're buying it in bulk, so it's a cheaper type of thing for the school systems. Well, they are the ones who are on the vanguard of this whole teaching correct, not the revisionist history, but correct history. And that's why, if you recall, there was a big brouhaha because they went more conservative. And they brought the Founding Fathers back into the books, and they want to ensure that all the founding documents are being taught to our children. Because for a long time, our kids' education was devoid of that. And we need to make sure. I mean, it's a shame when you can't sit there and say a Pledge of Allegiance before an assembly. It's a bigger shame, in my estimation, you can't sit there and say a prayer. But that being said, there's exceptions to a variety of other new issues coming up in the school systems. So the unfortunate thing has been our school systems as a whole for our children are more, they're not teaching institutions anymore. They're more of caretakers because they have to close some of these kids, unfortunately, coming to school. They have to feed them lunch and breakfast. They have to have extended daycare now for kids after school. It is kind of turned away from the reading, writing, and arithmetic mode. And unfortunately, there's no more discipline in the schools. So if they're not getting it at home, they're not getting it at school. You know, that broadens the subject out a little bit. But that's the reason why our children, if we don't sit there and make sure, are not getting what they should, the foundations and principles and standards that our great country was built upon.
And that's a great point you made, Joe, and I think that that is actually integral to our conversation tonight, because that specifically goes back to Trigger the Vote. It goes back to what we talk about every week, is that votes have consequences. Everybody has to get out and vote, because it doesn't matter if you're voting for the president. It doesn't matter if you're voting for your congressman or your senator. You need to vote from everybody from your county commissioner down to your local school board, because these are the people that are going to have the biggest influence on your life. Sure, the president may say, oh, well, you know, because I, you know, want this passed and I'm pushing the federal government to do something that is going to affect all Americans. But really, a lot of people don't realize this, is that in reality, the decisions you make at the local level can and sometimes do have the biggest impact on your life, whether that be voting for someone who decides to vote to zone a property a certain way, or to vote for the PTA to decide what's going on, you vote for your school board or your school commissioner, who's going to be, which direction is the curriculum going. I mean, in particular, I remember an issue that we had here where I live in Martin County in Florida, where, you know, there's a very, very pro, they call themselves Republicans on most of the county commission, because most of the demographic here is older. A lot of them are retired. Most of it's very conservative, but we have a very large estuary and river system here, being near the Atlantic, that's very, very fragile. So many of the conservatives here have a highly environmental leaning towards the way they operate. And then what happened was, one of the local gun ranges, actually, you know, we've had some gun ranges try to open up, and you can actually look through the different election logs and look and see the way people voted. And I happened to go back before the last, we had our primary elections about a month and a half ago, and I actually looked up all my county commissioners' votes on this particular issue. And the particular issue was a gun range and the feasibility for it. And many of the county commissioners, despite being what most people would consider conservative, were so, so very, very environmental or green or whatever you want to call it, that many of them, despite being conservatives, actually voted against putting in a gun range, which, you know, that makes a huge difference in my personal life, because I'm a firearms instructor. You know, I'm a lover of freedom and people's ability to defend themselves. And you know, in the firearm business and trying to educate people on proper use and handling. And so the point being, Joe, is that elections matter, whether it's the smallest thing that can affect your life. I mean, if that candidate had been, you know, more pro freedom or pro firearm and less on this green tract of environmentalism, maybe we could have, you know, drummed myself up some more business or other firearms instructors in the area. So the point being is that Joe, is that votes matter, whether it be the national or the local level.
Well, most certainly. You know, the famous quote by Tip O'Neill, long-term congressman from Massachusetts, all politics are local. That's where the rubber meets the road, and you have to make sure that you spend the time. Here again, then, it takes 5 minutes to vote, be it a school board election, be it a local election, be it your homeowners association election. Just take the time. But for some reason, people have 10,000 other things they need to do. It's one day a year. Go and get your voice heard. You can really change. And we're seeing that across the country right now. And you see how Carl Rove was wrong last week he's usually dead accurate. He made an assessment in New Hampshire, made an assessment in Delaware, and he was wrong in both counts. But it was one of these things where, you know, people are finally getting out there. They're finally saying, hey, I need to be part of the process, not part of the problem, part of the solution. So they're getting out there. I think your statement about getting involved, and they're starting to take heed of that then, and we're trying to move people forward, because people are starting to know that their pocketbook is starting to who have less money. Their taxes are going up. And the change that people hope for when they elected the current occupant of the Oval Office is not the change that they hope for with great hopes in the beginning. So it's one of these things where we need to make our voices heard, get involved in the process, volunteer as much time as you possibly can. Doesn't have to be a lot. At the very least, educate yourself on the voters, and then on election day, cast your vote.
And in particular, when we're talking about this whole subject, you know, obviously our audience is AR15.com members, and AR15.com, being that it's a firearms-related website, but it's actually more of a community, I think, than anything else. And you know, we really thank everybody who's a team member. And if you're not a team member, you know, we encourage you to purchase a team membership, encourage you to participate in all the great things like Radio Free ARFCOM or any of the boards when you post. You know, we really like to encourage that. But one of the great things about AR15.com is it's full of law enforcement and firefighters and EMTs, but also an awful lot of veterans are on there. And I touched on in my monologue opening the show about the Greatest Generation, you know, those young men who volunteered to go and fight and die with nothing more on their back than carrying the burden of freedom with them. And so that's all that they went forward with. I mean, sure, they gave them training and they gave them, you know, their rifle and their pack and all this. But really, what those folks went with was God and freedom. And you can't underestimate what that meant to our future and to our whole lives. I mean, you can look back through the Revolutionary War for the men who were fighting for freedom. Whichever side of freedom you would take a side with in the Civil War, but if you look back through the history of veterans in our country, they're all fighting for freedom, and the one freedom that I'm sure they would all agree upon is that we'd all be willing to take advantage of the opportunities that they gave us, and that opportunity is for us to vote. I mean, I can't imagine that a soldier in the Revolutionary War who was out there in Valley Forge, you know, freezing in the middle of December in Pennsylvania with snow and with starvation and with no shoes and with rags wrapped around him for warmth and eating that nasty porridge and not having but one musket ball left in his sack would be real happy if he knew the amount of people in this country that he fought and died for that decided, you know, I'm not going to vote today. I don't feel like it because, you know, Monday Night Football's on tonight. What do you say about that, Joe?
Well, my hat goes off to anybody who ever wore the uniform of our country. They are patriots. They have given of their own will, of their time. They volunteered now. If they were drafted during the wars that we conscripted people, they still went. There's a special, special place in heaven for every person who does that. They're the reasons why that we can sleep in our bed at night comfortably, because they're out there doing their duty on our behalf. We can at the very least honor them by doing our duty and spending 5 minutes to go out there and cast the vote. They can make, there's various threads that go out throughout the internet. I'm contacted by a lot of veterans and active forces currently. And there's all, I mean, you see these people, these soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and guardsmen out there risking their lives, living in very desperate locations and locales throughout the country, throughout the world. And we can't get off the easy chair to cast a ballot. You know, it's the same thing. Everybody will find the time to complain about something, but they won't find the time to try to rectify it. And that's where we are. I mean, all the people who have ever served our armed forces, they're heroes. All the people who have taken time to help a child along the way, be it a little league football coach or be a scoutmaster, then mother, these people have given up their time. It's all interwoven. They're taking time to help make our country greater than she is. All that is happening. As I said before, when I talk to these veterans who are deployed and they come back and they find out I'm on the board of the NRA, the first thing they say, keep doing what we're doing, because it solidifies in their mindset that what they're doing is just. What they're doing out there is they're fighting for our rights to defend our freedom. And we're fighting here domestically. All of us can do this. NRA member, non-NRA member, anybody. Fight for the rights that we have. And we're all going to disagree. We're all going to have arguments, and we're all going to have our own points of view. But if we sit there and say, okay, here's what the Founding Fathers said. Here's a kind of a blueprint, if you will, of what our country's all about. But sometimes we find other things, other dalliances that, you know, we vote because we're a member of the union. The union store tells us to vote that way. Or we decide because, you know, I never vote off the line that I am registered, so I can't vote for somebody who may subscribe to what we believe, but he or she is not of my political party. Or we sit there and say, well, I'm just tired today, so I'm not going to go out there. So these are the things that we have to rectify. We identify the problem. Voter turnout is dismally low. But we need Ben to sit there and say, okay, this is a pivot point. We have heard the call. We need to go out and make sure that we can change what is currently happening in our country. We'll be the better for it. We're not, unlike the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and guardsmen, we're not risking our life here, thank God. We can go to a place, normally up here in New York anyways, is some very friendly people who most likely will give you a donut when you're done filling in the circle on the bubble sheet. So you can put it in the scanner. So it takes about 2 minutes. Well, that's all it's all about, Ben. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's not a mystery. It's just take the time. If it takes you 5 minutes, you can go on the website now. It's very simple. Find out what candidate best suits your needs. You know, you mentioned about the ARFCOM community. It is a community. We got a lot of great people. I'm in constant contact with a lot of our team members. They're hardworking, fun-loving, strong opinion people. I wouldn't change, you know, this experience with anything. They're great people. We have I forged great friendships over that particular site. It's a wonderful thing. I don't believe we have to worry about the ARFCOM community. It's the people that are out there. So
well, Joe, I think one of the things that we can do as we're all community members here. We're together. I mean, you and I are brothers. All of our guests that we have on this show, we're all brothers. We're all friends. We're all part of the same community, and we all have the same thing in mind. We want to be free, and yet we also want to be united in the things that we do and in that freedom. We want to be united in our freedom together. And so I think one of the big stumbling blocks, even for me, even for a lot of people, I think is they don't really know how to get involved. And of course you mentioned earlier in our interview about getting involved with the NRA, and there's lots of great sites, you know, on there. But I think that even that potentially, as easy as it is, can be intimidating. I think that maybe, you know, for some of our new listeners, or maybe those that aren't necessarily very outgoing people, there's a lot you can do just from your own home. I mean, you can go, when you go to church on Sunday, you can say, hey, you know, listen, you know, make sure, you know, I know, you know, even without a platform, you just say, hey, look, you know, I don't care what you're thinking. I don't care what political affiliation you have. I don't care which way you're going to vote. But, hey, we're here. We're members of the community. Let's just make sure that we do it. It doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm not going to hate somebody from my neighborhood or from my church because, oh, well, he may vote for a candidate that I don't necessarily agree with. Because we all got to remember that we're all human. We're all human brothers before we are anything else. And we're all one people, you know, under God. I mean, that's America. We're one nation under God. And so we got to remember that it doesn't matter what – it's not an us against them thing. Everybody has different opinions. And so even if you don't know the person, you know, when you're going out to your mailbox and you see your neighbor there and you say, hey, neighbor, hey, you know, it's nice to meet you. by the way, are you ready to vote? You know, are you going to vote? Are you going to get out there and vote? You know, you don't have to harass them. You don't have to push them. You don't have to make, you know, this Herculean effort. You don't have to invest a lot of time and money. You just have to go out there and you just have to say in a friendly way to somebody you know. I mean, it's not a big deal. I know a lot of people are volunteering nowadays is very difficult for most people because of our obligations and our schedules. It's very difficult for anybody to make time. I mean, heck, you know, we see friends of ours, you know, and it's like, well, hey, I haven't seen you in 2 months, but it's nice to get together with you. Well, yeah, I've been busy, you've been busy, this and that. It's like that for everyone, and we understand that. But what I'm asking you, ARFCOM members, is to go out and just get one person. Just say to your neighbor or your the guy that's throwing your newspaper in your yard or your mailman or your people at your church or somebody, your coworker. Just go out there and say, hey, look, you know, even if I don't know you that well, hey, you know, hey, hey, my name's Benjamin. It's nice to meet you. You know, I know we're not super good friends. I don't know you that well, but I just want to make sure that you know that there are men and women that have died for our country, for our right to vote. And I just want to make sure that you know that and you get out here and you make sure you get your vote counted, because that's the price of freedom. And that's what freedom. That's what freedom is all about. I'll give you the last word, Joe.
I appreciate it, buddy, and I'm 100% behind you and your beliefs and your feelings. It's just something where it can't be said enough. If you don't like what's going on, get out there and vote. If you can talk to a friend, a neighbor, as Ben has just explained, do that as well. Every week we come here and give you new and novel ways to do it, cost-free. Just vote your freedom, get involved, and you'll be surprised with the results.
I couldn't say it better, Joe. Joe, I really appreciate the call. I think we had a great conversation tonight. For those of you out there, trigger the vote, triggerthevote.org. Make sure you get out there. Like we were saying, you know, the NRA is a great way to do it. If you can't do that, register to vote yourself. Get out there. Talk to your friends. Talk to your neighbors. You know, get anybody you can. It's not a matter of right and wrong and who you think, what your neighbor thinks. It's just we're all one nation under God, so we need to remember that, hey, you know, men and women have fought and died for our rights to vote, so let's make sure we get out there and honor those folks by making sure that we exercise our freedoms the best way to our ability and we know how. And we certainly thank Joe for being a guest, as always. He's always a great, great guest on here. And speaking of guests, we got a couple of great ones coming up. First, we're going to have Gary coming in. Our producer's trying to reach him right now. But what I'm going to do is I posted the link up there for you listeners on, let's see, AR15.com. That's the Tactical Night Vision link. Let me find the Kentucky Hometown Forum link. Just bear with me one moment here, folks. He's setting up a shoot for the Kentucky Hometown Forum, and we're going to have him on here shortly. Update, okay. Okay, here we go. Gary is with us. Let me just give you guys a little bit of a brief background info before we get to Gary. The fall or end of summer shoot is fast approaching this coming weekend, folks. You listening out there, I know you're out there in Radio Free ARFCOM land on AR15.com. Tell your buddies you're listening. Tell them if you're up in that area, it's not that far of a drive. Heck, I'm in Florida, and I can make that drive in probably 12 hours at the most. I know that you guys can get out there. It's the Saturday, September 25th, 2010. It's at the Knob Creek Gun Range. There's directions on here. There's all kinds of targets. There's all kinds of cool stuff. They've got all different lines. They've got vehicle appliances, Tannerite. They've got all kinds of crazy stuff. They've got some food there that's exceptional. I mean, it's the South. It's Kentucky. You know they're going to have some barbecue there. This is going to be good stuff. Make sure that y'all check in. Make sure that y'all get with our buddy. He goes by the name of Stump on AR15.com. We got him here with us right now. His name is Gary. Gary, brother, how you doing today, sir?
Ben, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing excellent. How about yourself?
Never better, never better. We're real excited, obviously, to be here. Our event is going to be October 23rd outside of Pennsylvania. So I just want to make sure your listeners understand. You had talked about the Knob Creek event. That's an amazing experience. Someday I certainly want to get down and check that one out. But ours is something that someday may get to that. I would love to see it get that big someday. But we're hosting what we believe is the East Coast's largest zombie shoot, and that's going to be at the New Holland Rifle and Pistol Club in Gap, Pennsylvania. And it's going to be we have about 175 or so registered shooters, which we capped it this year at that number because it's going to be our first time at New Holland. Every year the event kept getting bigger and bigger, and we basically outgrew the ranges that we were at. So we found a home at New Holland. It's a beautiful, beautiful facility, and hopefully will serve as host to this event for many, many years to come.
Now, Gary, give me that date again. That was at Gap in New Holland. What was the date
on
that? October?
In New Holland, Pennsylvania, it is going to be October the 23rd, which is a Saturday. And it is open to the public. We have a website which could give people directions on where they're going to need to park. Because we're expecting so many cars, we actually reserved a lot off-site. We're going to have shuttle buses that will take people from the parking area to the facility. We simply don't have the real estate for all the parking at the New Holland Gun Club. So we contracted with a local facility to handle the parking for us, and we're going to have shuttle buses to take people back and forth for a small donation, and they can come and visit. They would obviously need eye and ear protection like you would at any other gun range, but we would love to have anyone who wants to come by and check out this event.
That's awesome. Gary, it's a small world here in Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com land. You know, I actually talked to a couple of buddies of mine. I've actually had a customer come into the gun store the other day and talked about AR15.com, and I had mentioned to him, hey, I'm a member, by the way, blah, blah, blah. And we got to talking about AR15.com, and I said, hey, by the way, have you ever heard Radio Free ARFCOM? And he said, oh, yeah, I have. He said, you know the host, Benjamin? And he said, yeah. And I said, you know, my name's Benjamin, too. And he said, you mean? And I said, yep, that's me. Well, the funny thing is that I grew up in Lancaster, which I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness.
Exactly. I grew up there till I was about 16 years old before coming to Florida. So I know exactly where you're talking about. Gap, right near the famous. Probably the most famous bumper sticker in the world, the I Heart Intercourse bumper sticker.
Absolutely.
Near Gap in New Holland. So I know exactly.
Everybody in central Pennsylvania is smiling now. You just can't see them over the radio.
Oh, I'm sure. I know. I mean, I know what it's all about up there. I still got family up there and hoping to do some deer hunting up there, but this season with some family and definitely be up there for Christmas. But tell me a little bit about your event and what's going on.
Sure.
And how
this is our third year, and I would love to tell you this was great planning on our part to understand the significance of this theme, but one of our members came to us several years ago. We run a practical rifle shooting program in the area, and we would attract 20 to 25 shooters, and truthfully, most of them are ARFCOM members, and we would post on the Pennsylvania forum, and they would all come out, and we would have a good turnout if it was 20 or 25. And one of the younger members said, he said, Gary, let me tell you, we got to run a zombie shoot. And I looked at this young man and I said, geez, I don't know. I mean, this is I don't know how well that would go over, but he was so convincing and so compelling. I said, if you're committed to doing this, I'll support you and we'll run it. Now, we didn't even advertise it. We didn't post it on any of the forums. We just ran it like one of our practical rifle matches. Well, word gets out as these things happen, you know, as these things do with the internet. And I didn't even do any pre-registration, just ran the event. Well, if you remember that scene in the Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner at the end of the movie, you know, if they build it, you know, if you build it, they'll come, and all he sees is a line of cars. I'm standing at the range and I'm seeing this line of cars. I'm saying, oh my God, I need more food. But we had 85 people at that event, which was obviously about four times what we were usually expecting several years ago. So we started to plan the event for 2009, right after that shoot. That event, we had 100 and some odd people. It just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, thanks in no small part to AR15.com and its powerful marketing engine. We were able to get people from, I believe it was 8 different states last year. I haven't looked at the registration addresses this year, but I suspect it's probably even more states this year. Just based on this theme, and it's a compelling theme. People like the theatrics involved. One of the things that we decided to do, it is a three-gun style event, and I use that word style parenthetically. This isn't a three-gun match. Many of our participants, I sent them an after-action survey to try to get their feel for what they liked and what they didn't like about our event. And one of the things they said that they really liked was the low-pressure nature of our event. They wanted to go to a shoot, not a match. And the big difference is a match, we have a first, second, and third place finish. They wanted to come in, hang out with fellow Black Rifle shooters, and not be under the pressure of having to compete one-on-one against another person. So we took that to heart, and we base our event and purposely call it a shoot. And we do so to allow people of varying different abilities to come, enjoy the event. Those people who are hardcore three-gunners, they will find it very challenging. Those people who are new to the shooting sports will find it enjoyable because they will be able to compete at their own pace, and they won't have to worry about being judged against a seasoned 10-year three-gunner, where they would have no chance. So it's really something for everyone. We have 9 shooting evolutions, pistol, shotgun, pistol, rifle, and we have an inside airsoft stage. Now, I know many of us make jokes about airsoft, but I'll tell you what, that was one of our most popular stages. We have an indoor pistol range at New Holland, which we convert into a shoot house, and we team people up and we issue them airsoft machine guns, which are basically M4s, with tactical lights, and they have to go in, they have to clear a building. And the building is sensory overload. We have smoke, we have black lights, we have the music that my young teenage son listens to that makes my ears bleed, strobe lights, all kinds of things going on. And it really is a challenge for them to go in there with a limited amount of ammunition, clear out all the zombies and accomplish the task and get out before the zombies get them. And of all the shooting stuff we did, the survey said they enjoyed the airsoft stage because it was something that many people have never, ever done before, and it was an exciting thing.
So now, how do you go about setting up something like this? I mean, from you said one of the younger members had decided that you presented to you the idea. Now, where do you go from the presentation stage to the actualization or the realization stage?
Great question. Well, this is a labor of love for many, many volunteers. And just to give you an idea of our staff, when we did it first in 2008, we had staff of about 7 people. I had a budget that was in the single digits, like $100, $200. We were able to put this event on with very limited theatrics and very limited shooting evolutions by just asking people to help. And it was amazing, the outpouring of assistance we got from people in the trades, building things for us. It was just an incredible experience, and that just got magnified in 2009. But the staff got larger. So in 2009, I had a staff of about 35 people. These were all working people who took days off of work to help build things, come and set up, run the event. Just so you know, the money is all donated to the host club to help with shooting sports. We also have a charity this year, which is called Wounded Warriors, which is used to, they use the money to support the men and women in the service who were injured in combat. So we will have a raffle, one of our door prizes we will raffle off, and we will donate that money to the Wounded Warriors Project. This year's staff, at about 60, so you can see how it's been growing. So it's an exciting thing. It's something that requires an awful lot of people to really be committed to. We're very, very blessed with having New Holland. Their club management was 1,000% behind us. Without them, we could never do this because we think it's an exciting idea, but without a host club who's willing to roll up their sleeves and get us the range, they're shutting the range down Friday obviously Saturday for the shoot and then Sunday for the cleanup. So to get a private club to be willing to do that is a tremendous undertaking. We're very, very appreciative that they would be willing to do it. But it's the whole concept is a gathering of like-minded individuals who enjoy the type of rifles and the type of shooting that's featured on AR15.com every day of the week. It's why I am a member. It's why I'm interested in this hobby. And to see all these people come together, it's really pretty cool.
Well, I think that one of the things that we all need to remember, and you brought up a very good point regarding it, is that when we are, you know, approaching these clubs and we're having these shoots, and not only that, I mean, we need to have them, you know, we need to tell them that we are supporting them so that potentially that they can support the AR15.com website and membership as well. But, Gary, tell me a little bit about the club itself and the facilities you have set up, and what are some of the things that people can look forward to? You know, I know that, like I said, I have family in Pennsylvania right near there. I mean, if I drove up there for the weekend, it'd only take me about 15 minutes from my cousin's house to actually get to the shoot. So for those of us interested in going, tell me about what the facilities are like and what we can expect
absolutely.
And what you'll have to
absolutely.
Offer.
Absolutely. Well, when you show up, you're going to park in a parking lot. You're going to be processed through, and you're going to get on to one of our shuttle buses, and the adventure starts there. We're going to have our safety briefing on the bus because we have you as a captive audience. And, you know, let's not underscore safety. It is extremely important to us. All of our evolutions are reviewed by people with NRA chief range safety credentials, not once but twice. We have our staff go through the event on Friday just to make sure that everything is done properly. So you get on board the bus, you get off the bus, and now you're at the event. We've set up a gear storage tent so you can leave because it's a three-gun, and we don't want everybody to have to carry all their gear around. So you'll be able to store your gear safely, take the firearms that you need with you to the evolutions. And at that point, the concept of Contagion 2010 is like a Disney World theme where if you've been down to Disney World or any of the theme parks, certainly you living in Florida, I suspect you've been there once or twice. You know, you pay your admission, and if you want to ride Space Mountain 10 times, then that's what you do. The same concept with our event. We have 9 shooting evolutions and 1 inside airsoft stage. And the participants who are going to be at our event are free to shoot as many as they want, as often as they want, as frequently as they want. So that, again, this differs from a traditional 3-gun match where you basically have to complete a prescribed course of fire. You may want to take on our airplane stage more than once. We're fabricating a 32-foot cross-section of an airplane to mimic a flight of the living dead. There's some zombie themology that's going on with what we're trying to do. And in Flight of the Living Dead, the protagonist had to go and clear out this airplane full of the undead, and we're trying to pay homage to that and mimic it. So let's say you shoot the first time, and perhaps you're not happy with your performance. You want to get back in line, shoot it again. Go ahead and shoot it again. Or if you want to go to one of the other stages, the butcher shop perhaps, and enjoy that stage, which would be a shotgun and pistol stage, go for it. Go do it again. That was another comment that we got from our participants from 2009. They said, boy, we'd love to, you know, shoot these evolutions again. Can we? And the playing team got together, and we said, well, geez, why not? So we put into place the Disney World theme where you pay your admission, go in there and take your choice of whatever it is you want to fire. So we put in recommended round counts so people know, you know, how much ammunition to bring and what type of ammunition to bring for what we're trying to accomplish. And that's pretty much it. What they shoot and how often they shoot is truly up to them.
Now, I know this event is obviously taking place. I'm looking at my calendar here. It's going to be October 23rd. That's a Saturday. That is the week before Halloween.
That's correct.
Now, the question is obviously on the tip of my tongue, as it is, I'm sure, on the tip of your ears. You do this for Halloween or what?
yeah. It's we typically schedule it around the last week of October because I think when I think of Halloween, I kind of think, again, dressed up, and my goodness, nothing lends itself more to that theme than the zombie event. We actually encourage people to dress in theme, and One of our vendors actually will provide prizes, and we call it the best dressed zombie hunter and the best dressed zombie couple. And in the couple scenario, only one of them has to be a registered shooter in order to win. And that's really to provide a little bit of extra incentive for people who might be so inclined to kind of dial it up with the attire. And we get some real interesting folks who show up here. Picking that prize is always very, very difficult because there's so many folks who really put time into their costumes, I guess, for lack of a better term. And they will go in very painstakingly detail characters out of some of these various horror flicks. So it's something to see and something to watch. Just if you're a people watcher, this would be a fun thing. Even if you're not a shooter, you'd probably enjoy just watching the crowd because it is a very eclectic group of people.
I don't know. This is just me talking here, but I don't necessarily know if I'd want to be dressing up as a zombie in the middle of a bunch of AR15.com members. But that's just me, because you never know.
Most of them are zombie hunters. So we had one young lady. She dressed up as the undead, but the majority of them dress up on the other end with the zombie hunting attire. And then there's just so many of these movies that are out there that they can pick from. But one of the other evolutions, because you asked me about what people could expect, I guess I'm an old guy. My first recollection would be Night of the Living Dead, and I will confess I'm not an expert in this film genre at all. I had to take a crash course just so I could be intelligent in talking with some of these guys. But that was kind of the first one I remember. It was shot in black and white, and one of the scenes it just was very striking is when the undead were coming in and they had to defend the house. So what we did is we are actually building a makeshift house, and our participants will have to defend the house from the undead using both a pistol and a rifle. So I think for those who are really heavy into the theme and the movies, I'm hoping they see some of these homages we're doing to the various films.
Well, I certainly hope that you hook me up with a couple links so I can post them for the ARFCOM members and for the general membership.
Absolutely. The easiest way for people to get information on the shoot is to go to our website, which is www.contagion2010.us. And that will link them to our page. It'll explain the evolutions, explain the logistics of how to get here, directions, and what have you. It also will give them a link to a Facebook page. We have a Facebook page with 95, as of yesterday, members who are either participants, staff, interested in the event, probably people who are coming, and there's dialogue and pictures and some videos of things that we've done. So it's very exciting. And one of the things that was really, really cool that I'm just happy to announce, many of us watched Top Shot. I think it was probably one of the most successful shooting programs that anybody's ever put on, at least in recent memory. And lo and behold, one of the fellows who was in that event lives in Pennsylvania. So through the magic of Facebook, I found this gentleman and I sent him a note and I said, hey, we're throwing the zombie shoot not too far from you. Would you be interested in coming? A day later, I get a phone call from Mr. Peter Palma, who was I believe he came in fourth on Top Shot. He was a Reserve Marine Corps sniper. And those of you who watched the show will remember he was the fellow who always would dress up in the interesting pants and he would always wear a tie, and He was a real character. Well, lo and behold, he is a zombie hunting fanatic. This is his passion. And he said, I've heard all about your shoot. I was always wondering how I could get to it. I said, well, guess what, Peter? You're my guest. You're coming. And he was thrilled. And to tell you the character of this guy, he called me back the next day. He says, I went to the website and I saw what you're doing. He said, when are you setting all this up? I said, well, we're group of us are taking off work. We're going to set up on Friday. He said, I'll be there, and I'll help. So not only is he coming to shoot the event, but he's coming to help us set up. So that will speak to his character as a person. What a great guy. And for those of you who watched him on television, he's exactly the same way in person on telephone that he is on TV. He's a fun guy, and we're so thrilled and happy that he's coming to our event. So he will be there. So for those who want to meet him or see him, come on down.
And one thing, what exactly for this event should, I mean, obviously we have RF Commerce and we're all over the country. I mean,
right.
You know, I've got a day drive ahead of me if I'm going to try to make it up there, which I would love to, by the way. But for our other members out there in maybe neighboring states or some are even a little bit closer or farther away, what would somebody like me, who's a shooter, an NRA instructor, you know, what would your average participant who wanted to join this thing and they go have a good time, what would we need to bring to have a really good time? You know, give us a little bit of a very, very basic and quick rundown of, say, you know, armament and ammo count of what somebody would need
sure.
to really have a good time at that event.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, again, this would be a traditional three-gun event, so you would need a magazine-fed semi-automatic rifle, and, of course, we always promote the AR-15.com, but we do permit AKs and other such lesser carbines, kidding all you AK lovers. You would need a magazine-fed carbine. You would also need a shotgun, and for these events, most likely your typical 870 or Mossberg 500 would be appropriate, something with an 18 or 20 inch barrel, although all we're asking is people to bring a semi-automatic shotgun or pump. And the reason for that is we have an awful lot of people who want to shoot these evolutions, and to have someone with a single shot or a double barrel, just the reloading of it would take a lot of time. So to properly cycle everybody through, we're asking them to have a semi or a pump. Then you'd need a pistol with a strong side holster. Most people would bring semi-automatics, although it's not a requirement. The ammunition, probably anywhere between 25 and 50 shotgun shells. I would say probably 100 pistol rounds, and I would say probably about 150 rifle rounds. And why I'm equivocating is what we don't know is how many evolutions people are going to want to shoot. So if you're a pistolier and you say, boy, I really want to go and shoot all these pistol evolutions again, you know, you could burn through more pistol ammunition than somebody who would be more inclined to shoot the rifle. To test everybody's skill, we are going to have a stage that's going to reach out to 500 yards. The great thing with New Holland is it actually has a 600-yard range, but we have steel out to 500 yards. So there's going to be one, depending on the perimeter stage, where you're going to have to go 200, 300, 400, 500 to see if you can ding steel with your rifle. So a bunch of people emailed me. They said, well, can we bring precision rifles? And I said, well, you know, if you want to, but just remember, you got to carry all this gear, right? So think about what you're going to pack, and it sort of forces people to economize and give some thought to the gear that they're going to shoot. The typical rifle would be anywhere between, the rifle evolutions would be anywhere between 50 to 200 yards in length, and you'd be shooting reactive steel, or you'd be shooting at zombie-style targets for the rifles, and the same with the pistols and shotguns. So the idea is, we want to make sure everybody has a safe, fun time, but we also know that, you know, time is money. We want to get everybody through the evolution so they can enjoy themselves and have a good, safe time, and hopefully come back and see us again next year.
And just so you know that in regards to my monologue tonight about the M1 Garand, zombies hate M1 Garands because not only does it shoot a 30-06, you can shoot through about five of them if they're in a line, but you can also smash your heads in like a club with a big, heavy wooden buttstock of that sumbitch.
Yes, you can.
And reach out to 500 yards if that's your thing. But of course, lugging it across the plane, you got a 10 or 12 pound rifle with you. Before we get to our next guest, Gary, do you have anything you'd like to?
Would not surprise me. So I just hope they're well trained in how to reload it, so we don't have any M1 Grand Thumb like yours truly had when he first got his from the CMP.
Would you mind emailing or IMing me a link, and I'm going to post it here on the show when I put it up. It's benjamin@ar15.com, or just IM me at Benjamin and give me all the details on this.
Sure, and I'll do you one better. If you're interested in coming, you will be my personal guest.
I would honestly love to. I got to see what's going on for whatever it's worth. I may or may not be employed at the time, but
okay.
Fully, that
well,
is.
We hope you are employed, but if you find yourself in Pennsylvania on the 23rd, just give me a heads up ahead of time because I'll have to make arrangements, but you would be most welcome. You will be my personal guest at the shoot. For anyone else who is interested in attending the actual shooting portion of this, it is sold out. It's sold out in 17 minutes, but What happens is from time to time, we do get cancellations. People have stuff come up in their lives that they can't attend. And we are putting together a waiting list. And the waiting list, in essence, is if you're in a position where you can move with like a week or two's notice, shoot me an email. Can I give an email address? Or they can just go to the website and my email address is there. Tell me that you want to be put on the waiting list and give me your contact information and we'll put you up on the list. And we usually have 5% of the people who just, you know, life intersects with them and they can't make the event for whatever reason. We would reach out to you and we would invite you to see if you wanted to come.
Why don't you go ahead and give us that email and that website here on the air. Do it,
okay.
Do it very
sure.
Slowly. And
the
do it
the
twice
website
for each
is www.contagion2010.us. My email is lastdefender@AOL.com, and for those, that's my screen name at AR15.com as well. So if you come to the Pennsylvania Forum or just look for Last Defender, I'm a frequent poster and been around AR15.com for many, many, many years. Just send me an IM, or better and easier, send me an email. And I'll make contact with you. We will get you on our waiting list. And again, as fate would have it, again, I've done this now. This is the third year, and it's typically always about five. I have a 5% occult attrition rate. Just things happen in their lives where they're unable to attend, and then we go through the waiting list for the people who can move quickly. It's going to be an amazing event, and I think it's going to be something that if you can find yourself in the Lancaster area, which is where this is, on the 23rd of October, it's worth checking out. And if you are someone who would be inclined to want to shoot it, just send me an email and I'll get you on our waiting list and we'll see how it goes.
Well, Gary, thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now for donations to my personal diesel fund for my F-250 so I can go to Pennsylvania for just something I thought about on the 23rd of October I had to attend. But as I said, if anybody else wants to get a hold of it, make sure you contact Gary. Go to those websites. He's going to send me some links. We'll post them up. Thank you so much, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having us and allowing us to talk about it. And thanks to AR15.com, because truthfully, this event is the way it is because of AR15.com and because of the support we received from its members and the site. And without AR15.com, this event would not take place. So it's really, we thank you, and we thank all the people who run it and everything that they do to help us.
Thank you, and I couldn't have said it better myself. You know, AR15.com is the reason why we're here. That's the reason why we're listening. You know, it's the reason why all these great guests are on the show. You know, AR15.com, if you're not a member, please purchase a team membership. I mean, it really helps out the site. It really helps all the guys and gals that are putting this thing together for us, not only with the website, with the internet, with the radio show, with all the great stuff that's going on. We've got some people on here that wouldn't be where they are today without Radio Free ARFCOM. For example, I mean, we had just last week, we had Paul Darling with his Taliban Safari. We had Stephen Pajak with his zombie novel Mad Swine. Now we've even got another zombie author. His name is Jeremy Rayberg, and if you go to the website, you can look at his blog. I'm about three-quarters of the way down here on it. It's called Zombie Island, and here we have – I'm going to read a little bit to you from it, from Zombie Island, and let me just turn to the chapter that I'm on right now. And excuse me while I scroll down here. He says – actually, they're walking dead. Undead implies they're alive, which is what they are for now, but these two dorks are definitely not. In the distance, they could hear the double siren of the ambulance, which sounded to be closing on them. It had probably just made the turn onto the causeway, which put it at just under a mile from where they stood. About a minute later, the siren cut out, and Smitty assumed it was because the medics were about to pull out our front. He jogged out to the road, but no ambulance. 1351 to dispatch. Where's that ambulance? I heard them roll in, and I'm in front of the residence. Can you get an ETA? Smitty asked. Stand by, 1351. Standing in the hollow darkness of a ribald lane, Smitty realized he was drenched in sweat. He could feel the beads running down the channel in his vest, formed by his spine, and where it collected in the waistband of his pants. The muggy glove of marsh-tainted owner wafted through the trees, and he became aware of another scent as the breeze drifted by. It wasn't the marsh, and it wasn't overflow from a nearby sewage lift station. The smell was of decay, piss, and stuff, and the menage of other bodily fluids he'd encountered over his career, and it was entirely out of place in his current setting. And with us, we have Jeremy Rayburg, the author of the book I was just reading from called Zombie Island. And y'all can look at the link for Zombie Island on the Radio Free ARFCOM show schedule. Jeremy, you're with us now. How are you doing, sir? It's a great novel. I'm about a third of the way through it. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good, Benjamin.
Thank you for being a guest on Radio Free ARFCOM. And tell us a little bit about Zombie Island.
Okay. Zombie Island began as just an idea with a coworker and I answering a burglar alarm on Sea Island, which is just off the coast in southeast Georgia. And once we were done with what we had to do, we were walking around the side of the house. It was about dark as being inside a raccoon's butt. And he said, you know, wouldn't it be creepy if you turned on your flashlight and there was a zombie standing there? And it just kind of snowballed from there.
Well, you know, sometimes that's how the best novels and books come around and the best ideas. I mean, we've had Stephen Pajek on last week where he basically started a thread on ARFCOM just sort of posting the beginnings of a random zombie novel, and then it sort of snowballed, and now, you know, he's got a new book out, and I assume that that with this, I mean, you just published, it looks like, on the on today, the 20th, the last segment of your novel.
That's more of a story-length project. After reading a few of the links and threads in the Zombie Central forum, I tried to gauge the average attention span of a random ARFCOMer and figure that if I could get somebody to read it in an hour or an hour and a half, that would probably be better than putting out a novel length project that would take in the neighborhood of 4, 6, 8 hours to actually finish. That way they can sit down and get a big helping of blood and guts and brains flying and get up and say, hey, that was neat. And, you know, somewhere along the way, maybe they recognize one of the characters in the story. I was fortunate to have some of the fellows from the Georgia Hometown Forum donate their likenesses to be used in the story. I was actually able to use some of their personal weapons or what they told me was their ideal weapon combo should the crap hit the fan or should there be a zombie infection or outbreak. So I thought that was pretty neat. I got feedback along the way and actually got a couple of ideas as the story went along of things that some of the guys would like to see, and some of them volunteered to be eaten. I gave an ultimatum in the beginning that the first 15 guys that allowed me to use their likeness would not be eaten. And everybody after that, of course, had to be kind of culled from the herd before the end. But towards the end, it speeds up and gets over with very quickly. It's big. There's a lot of fire. There's a lot of violence. And I tried to put a little twist on the ending.
Well, one of the things that I've always thought that was great about AR15.com and in particular AR15.com community is that there's so many people out there that are willing to participate. And we've seen this before. I mean, we've seen other authors, and they subject their works to the criticisms and to the inputs of the membership, and then the membership volunteers and say, hey, I want to be a part of this. Hey, let's do the story in this or that, and then we leave it up to the authors such as yourself to actually steer the story and to incorporate it. And like I said, one of the things that I found absolutely, you know, I'm sitting here reading this before the show starts, and I'm going through it, and I'm looking at DC, and I'm looking at John, and I'm looking at all the other characters and Chambers, and I start busting out laughing when I get to the part about the email to one of the characters who is a very strong resemblance to an AR15.com member, and I just thought it was so great how you incorporated, you know, the characters and sort of the ebb and flow and sort of some of the nuances that only an AR15.com member would actually pick up.
I did try to fit in some of the favorite sayings and oft-repeated phrases that you see on ARFCOM. I couldn't get all of them in there. Realistically, I couldn't create a situation that would be perfect for each saying, but I tried to put a few of them in there. I thought anybody from ARFCOM that read it would get a laugh out of it. And I think what I ended up with was, like I said, it's something that you can sit down and, you know, if you've got a couple hours, you can finish the whole thing and say, you know, hey, I kind of enjoyed that. Having the feedback from the Georgia Hometown Forum, which I have to give thanks to because they allowed me to use them. And some of them actually do have specialties in those fields, which meshed perfectly with the story. I had some different ideas in mind along the way, and using their feedback and guidance, I was able to fit in things that they thought would be cool. So to anybody from the Georgia Hometown Forum that's listening, I want to say thanks. And, you know, I really appreciate it. Getting feedback from them was just shy of having live feedback, sitting down, brainstorming ideas about the story and getting instant feedback on it. So I think it went as fast as it could from the time I started actually writing it to the time I finished up this afternoon.
Now, one of the things that I was looking at here is, you know, where do you kind of get the idea for all this from? And you said, you know, you were talking about you're out on patrol, but how does that idea manifest itself into an actual story that you can present and you can unfold upon the listeners and where do you, you know, once you get the, once you say, once it's an avalanche, once you get the ball rolling, where do you continually to pick up these ideas from as the snowball rolls down the hill?
Well, I do read a lot. I've read a lot of Robert Ludlum, Tom Clancy, and here lately, James Lee Burke. He's a very, very colorful writer, and that's how I try to pattern a lot of the verbiage and sentence structure in the story after. Sea Island was the home to the 2004 G8 summit, where you had eight of the world's leaders all in one place, all at one time. It wasn't such a stretch that somebody might know or might have an idea of what the schedule was or what their itinerary was. There were a couple of photo opportunities on the beach. And if they knew about that, then, you know, potentially somebody could take advantage of it. And that's where the idea for using a biological weapon came in. And the bioweapon or chemical weapon, maybe with some links to the government, that's been used in a lot of different movies and a lot of different stories. I didn't go into too much detail about it. I just tried to come up with a semi-realistic delivery method. A group of bad guys decides to try to deliver this biological weapon during a photo opportunity that's out on the beach on the north end of Sea Island, which is perfectly out in the open. An attack with guns or firearms would probably not work because of the number of people hiding in the bushes or out in the open with guns of their own. So they decide to use a different approach. They're foiled in that attempt. And 6 years later, the biological weapon that sank with the boat happens to rupture and infect everybody that's in the water on a particular afternoon. The infection begins there, in what would be the present day, and it just happens that the first people to encounter infected persons are a couple of cops responding to a burglar alarm, and it just takes off from there. It's nothing like they've ever seen before. They're pretty much unprepared for it. It kind of scares the hell out of them the first time they see a couple of these things, take care of them, and, you know, within minutes of putting down the first couple of zombies, they realize that something is way out of control, and they pretty much lose all the normal constraints that govern a police officer as he's going about his normal day.
That was one of the things that really struck me, and I was actually about to just ask you about a brief storyline, but you really answered my question before I asked it. But what we have here is we had a couple of normal Joes that are police officers that are, you know, I guess you could call them suburban police officers in a small town, you know, beach type resort. They're looking out for vandalism, for kids that are on summer break doing stupid stuff, or they're out there, you know, doing whatever it is that teenagers do. And then you have this backdrop that we go back in time a little bit of some of this little, government. What are they doing? They've got some biological stuff going on. And then we go back to the future, and then we have a couple of the characters that are looking at this thing from the perspective of, hey, we realize what reality is. And then we have another character who says, well, wait a minute, no, I'm a police officer. Let's deal with this in the terms that we define as being reality. And then the zombies turn to look at him, and he realizes, uh-oh, you know, this is, as in ARFCOM term, it's photon. You know, we begin to see that. This is a very good, at least what I liked so far, and don't give it away for me or anybody else, but because I'm not finished with it yet, and I don't want to give up the goat here, but it's certainly the storyline, the way it's progressing as I'm reading it now, is very, very cool in the way you have very good transitions between what's happened in the past and what's happening in the current. And people's reactions seem very, very natural. And where did you get that sort of reaction that you're gauging people's natural ease? One of the things, like I saw, was when the police officers look at these victims, they instantly know that something isn't right. Whereas maybe a civilian like myself or a normal Joe wouldn't necessarily recognize, you know, and obviously being a zombie fan, you know, I'm in a potentially recognize something before average Joe would, but you know what I mean? Where did you get that sort of characterization that makes these characters feel human in not only their reaction, but also their reaction in terms of the establishment that they come from?
Well, that's one of the beauties of fiction. I can make up something, and if I decide to create my own details around it, like the virus itself or some shadowy pseudo government agency, I can make up all those details and open myself up to whoever wants to criticize it, or I can just kind of hint at it, beat around the bushes, and leave it up to the reader to fill in the blanks. Some people appreciate that, some of them don't. I tried to describe the zombies, some of them individually as best I could. And that way they were so different from the way a normal person would react in a given situation that there really was no question whether the person was infected or not. You know, you come upon them, you approach them, you issue some kind of verbal command or you ask a question, and you get nothing but blood drooling out of the mouth, and they're lumbering. They have broken bones. They have skin hanging off of their face, and there's you know, their eyeballs are completely red, and there's just something wrong with them. And of course, in the beginning, the police officers are the only ones who are dealing with them. It's the middle of the night, between them and maybe a few crooks that, you know, aren't even mentioned in the story, are the only people out at night. So they're the only ones dealing with them to begin with. And he gets the folks from the website involved. Now there was a bit of a hiccup using ARFCOM in the story, so we used a fictional website. That way it was a non-issue. But he sends out a message to some folks in the Georgia hometown forum of this other website, and they start showing up in ones and twos. Some of them show up by the truckload, and it just goes from there. And as each group and each individual arrives, they overhear things going on in the command post, and they start riding along with other people, and they get the general idea. And by that point, anytime they encounter one of these creatures, it's patently obvious to them just by the way the infected person is acting. As far as trying to convey a sense of fear or apprehension, I don't know that I concentrated on that too much. I've been a soldier and a police officer, and I've been scared plenty of times. So it was, when I thought I could, I put in the being scared part. I think that's in just about every zombie story or movie that you'll ever see.
Now we're going from, we've obviously got I posted the link up on the show schedule for tonight. I'm not sure if you'd heard the last week's segment when we talked to Stephen about some of the challenges with publishing, but where's your progress going from actually taking this story? Are you planning on making it into a paperback, into a book that we can actually order, or is this going to stay a strictly online and blog type gig for you?
Right now, my plans for it are kind of small. What I would like to do is to publish it to a file hosting site where somebody could download it, or maybe publish it on Amazon.com. That way, if somebody has a Kindle or other format that's capable of downloading it, they pay a few dollars, they download it, and hopefully they enjoy it. Beyond that, being that it's a short story, from the research I've done into the publishing industry and marketing, it's really tough to market a short story on a large scale, unless you rewrite it as a script and happen to know just the right person in the industry to get it in front of. So I don't really have my hopes up. I could shamelessly pimp the project while I'm talking to you on ARFCOM radio, but that's probably the extent of any kind of advertising or promoting that I'll do with it. I'm supposed to have some artwork coming in for it, which I would like to insert in between the chapters, kind of as a storyboard layout. I'll send a shout out to XCR Monger. I can't remember what state she's in, but I know she's a frequent poster in General Discussion and a couple of other places. She did volunteer to do some artwork for it. I would love to see my words in a visual interpretation and involve yet another member from ARFCOM. I think that would be great.
Well, I know that XCR Mogger is one of the bigger posters on some of the forums, and we'd certainly be welcome to have her on the show. And I know that looking at some of her stuff, she's certainly a very very active poster and a very very prolific and able participant on the era15.com website. So I'm sure that'll be a great addition to your story, and we certainly look to see what you've got coming forth. Speaking of which, is there anything that you have in the works as far as, is this just a one-time shot, or can we look for a sequel coming up or something along those lines? Do you plan on continuing to write, or how you feeling about your project so far?
I've been writing substantially for about 3 years now. I've completed one other novel. I made an attempt a couple of years ago to sell it to a literary agency or get somebody to sell it for me, and I was 100% unsuccessful in that. Probably has more to do with marketing than anything else. It's not a zombie story. It's kind of set as a backstory to a a video game storyline. But for whatever reason, I wasn't able to sell it. I'm working on two other novels right now. One of them I will probably try to publish on Amazon.com. If I can use that as kind of a feeler gauge to the work that that's completely coming out of my head, maybe that'll give me a better idea of where I, whether I should continue this and actually try to make some money out of it. The other novel that I'm working on, I can't really speak about because the idea is from another person. It was their idea, and I've done all the writing and all the research for it. If that is successful, or if I get a hint that it's going to be successful, I'll definitely post something about it on ARFCOM. As the years have gone by, I've narrowed down the websites that I visit, and ARFCOM just happens to be one that I keep coming back to.
Well, certainly, we're happy to have you on era15.com and on Radio Free ARFCOM in particular. We always love to have guests, and like I said, if any of our listeners out there have a question or a comment that they'd like to ask, we'd be certainly happy to have you. Now, Jeremy, we're getting at the time in the show every week that we do, where we're getting near the zombie tip of the week. Now, reading your story, and like I said, I haven't finished it all, so don't give away the ending, but what would your particular zombie tip of the week be for this week for our Era15.com audience?
Wow, that's a good one. I'll have to confess that I have never read a zombie novel. I've seen a bunch of zombie movies, nowhere near as many as some of the guys that post up a lot in Zombie Central. And I'll go ahead and have to get that out of the way. However, I would have to say Caliber is my zombie tip for the week, is Caliber. If you're going to bring something to the party, bring a firework that goes bang every time you get one in the head.
Okay, being that's what you said, what caliber, if you got to pick one zombie tip of the week from Jeremy Rayberg, author of Zombie Island, caliber of choice. It's Z Day. What are you picking?
I'm picking the FAL, a well-tuned FAL. Because to quote another poster who probably quoted it from somebody else, 308, because they tend to hide behind stuff when you shoot at them.
Well, like I was saying earlier, if I had to take my M1 Garand out there, you can just line them up five in a row and take them all out in one shot. And you may only take eight round clips, but you can take out a heck of a lot of them in one shot, right?
You got it. All the little ones bunch up and all the big ones line up.
That's right. Well, this has been Jeremy Rayberg, the author of Zombie Island. I've got a link up on the show. Jeremy, thank you so much for being on Radio Free ARFCOM tonight. It's been a pleasure, sir. And you got to let us know. Call us back. Let me know when you're going to be around. We'll put you on the show. Let me know when that thing's in print form. And we also want to know when you got the sequel coming out, because I can't wait to finish your first book, and I definitely am interested in a sequel. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ben. You guys have a good weekend.
Thank you, and God bless you for your service in the law enforcement community. We thank you so much. And now we go to, let's see if we got time for the normal zombie tip of the week. Let's talk to the producer. There's a few odds and ends we got to wrap up, but it has begun. We got a new message here. Let's see how we're doing on time, folks. We got about 2 minutes left. So we're going to make it real quick. We're going to wrap it up. We got a link here for Contagion 2010. Go to www.contagion2010.us. That's contagion.us. That's for the zombie shoot coming up in October 23rd. I'm going to try to be there if I can have my, convince my fiance to let me take a road trip to PA. Maybe get some pick up some ARFCOM hitchhikers along the way. I think it'd be awesome. Email me, Benjamin at air15.com. Send me an instant message, Benjamin on air15.com. Let's hook it up. Let's get out there. Let's shoot some freaking zombies here, folks. Also, don't forget that there are some big midterm elections approaching rapidly. Make sure you visit triggerthevote.org to learn how you can help get involved. We all need to do our best to get out and vote and get our coworkers, our friends, our family out to vote for the cause of freedom. Remember that you probably won't agree with everything your local politician has to say, but we still need to vote for the best possible candidates, whether it's your school board or the president of the U.S. We need to vote for candidates that are advancing the cause of freedom and scaling back the tentacled beast that has become our government on every level. Thank you to Air15.com for hosting the show. And, most importantly, thanks to the Radio Free ARFCOM fans. And be sure to accidentally the whole show to all your friends. And please visit Air15.com's site sponsor links and support the site by purchasing a team membership in the Air15.com store. As always, I encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible so I can book them ahead of time. Zombie Killer of the Week, be sure to tune in next week for another great show. But until then, this has been your Radio Free ARFCOM. Good night, folks. Thanks for listening.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.